Record. We all good? We all good. Okay. Welcome to the second episode of our podcast.
I think we should just leave a little bit of dead time first.
Welcome to the second... it feels weird now. Feels weird. Yeah. Okay, now a little sip of OJ. Do you want to give it a go? Go on.
Hello, and welcome to episode 2. This is Backcountry.
HK.
Yeah. Hello, Tim. Sat across from me.
Hello, Paul. How are you today?
I'm good, thank you. How are you, sir?
Looking forward to an exciting week of cinema.
Yeah, in fact, this week sees the release in Hong Kong of a highly anticipated film called Inception.
Yeah, well, I've only just heard about this today, and it's got a stellar cast. Absolutely freaking amazing.
Incredibly. I mean, first off, it's directed by Chris Nolan.
Yeah, so the director of The Dark Knight and The Prestige, like two awesome films the past couple of years.
Yeah, the guy who's basically revamped the whole Batman franchise from being a joke.
To being rubber-nippled Joel Schumacher wankfests to actual proper dark graphic novel interpretations.
Yeah, and Inception looks like it's going to be an absolute stonker. And it comes out this Thursday in Hong Kong. So,
Oh, it's a public holiday as well, July 1st. Great excuse to get out to the cinema and see some films.
Yeah, and talking about the cast, we've got Leonardo DiCaprio in there as the main role.
Sweet.
Dom Cobb is his name.
Dom Cobb.
Yeah, one of the worst names.
Yeah, a bit of a shame. For a film that's got an awesome premise, he's got a ridiculous name.
Indeed. And who else is in there? Ken Watanabe of The Last Samurai fame. Yeah, he was in one of Christopher Nolan's other films as well. He was in Batman Begins.
Oh, sweet.
Ra's al Ghul.
Ra's al Ghul. Nice. Yeah. Saying that doesn't look familiar.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Yeah, so Third Rock from the Sun, but more recently...
500 Days
of Summer. Wicked film, man.
Yes, with Zooey Deschanel.
Yeah, and if you saw... Oh, God, she's gorgeous. I love her. She's like, she is just a woman that I love. The hair, eyes, those
I'm glad she's
big
a woman,
eyes.
Because if you were about to say I could fondle her balls, I'd get a little
worried. But, did you see G.I. Joe?
No, I did not.
It was awful. Well, it's kind of entertaining. But Joseph Gordon-Levitt plays Cobra, the Cobra Commander.
Ah.
And pretty well as well, you know. It's a good little performance.
He's been popping up now and again in these really, really good roles for him. And fair play to him.
Yeah, more than that, he's doing really well the past few years in independent cinema. A couple of small roles. We won't go into it now. Mm. But he's really making a name for himself. Yeah.
There was that film Brick, right?
Brick, yeah.
That was brilliant as well. Moving along, we have, who else is in there? Ellen Page.
Yeah, another hot young
Juno,
thing.
Hard Candy. Oh. She was in X-Men as well as Kitty Pryde.
Yeah?
Yes,
oh, that's
was.
Right. Yeah. Jumps through walls and things.
Yeah. Cillian Murphy's in there, another Christopher Nolan favourite.
He was a scarecrow in,
in scarecrow
first Batman.
Batman Begins, and he has a quick cameo in Dark Knight.
Yeah.
He's also in 28 Days Later.
Yeah.
That's what
brilliant
kicked him
film.
Off.
And Sunshine.
Yes.
Danny Boyle. That's a wicked film. Yeah, Cillian Murphy's actually one of my favourite sort of hot actors at the moment.
And he's hot too.
Yeah, he's a good looking chap.
Just to out myself. Yeah. And of course, Michael Caine.
Just to round out an awesome cast.
Absolute legend.
Yeah.
Speaking of Michael Caine, if you haven't seen Harry Brown, go and watch that. Get it any way you can. Brilliant British film. Watch it. It'll change your
That's
life.
That's the one you were talking about, that's sort of like a modern... modern, what's it called? The original Michael Caine, where he's a badass.
Get Carter. Yeah, it's like that, but the story's different. It's a bit more current to our times.
Okay.
Lots of jabs. Yeah, man. But that comes out on Thursday. You should definitely check it out. I am excited as hell for it.
I'm just baffled how I haven't heard anything about it. It's
exactly.
Just like, it's completely slipped under the radar, and it's
especially
an awesome premise
Kong.
As well. Yeah, I mean, Well, why do you say especially in Hong Kong?
Well, in Hong Kong, I haven't seen any trailers, any posters for it. Yeah. I've seen posters and trailers for Triple Tap, which comes...
This looks awful as well.
Yeah, that's a local film.
Louis Koo, Daniel Wu.
Yeah, and it just looks terrible. I've got to watch it anyway, but it looks terrible. Mm. They're advertising for Toy Story 3, which...
That could be fun, you
has
know.
Topped the box office.
Has it?
Yeah. There's no doubt that it everyone wouldn't.
Well, I mean, it was sort of like a punch-up between that and Shrek. There's a new Shrek, isn't
there? Yeah, Shrek Forever After.
Forever After.
I got bored of Shrek after the first one.
I like the first two. They were good, but then they've just got proper gimmicky, and I think this one is just going to be another vehicle for this 3D cinema that I'm really not liking.
Yeah, I think it's stale.
Yeah, proper. And yeah, I've read a couple of reviews as well, and it's not translated well, apparently.
No?
Yeah, well, the great thing about the Shrek series is that it entertained both, like...
parents and adults.
Parents and adults.
Parents and kids.
Parents and kids, yeah, you're right. They take classic fairy tale themes, but they inject a lot of adult-related stuff as well. And, like, a lot of... what do they call that? Like, popular...
pop culture.
Pop culture, yeah. So, but apparently they just... try to go too far with this one, and it's not really worked out.
Well, sorry, I have to finish your sentences for you, man. I feel like such a twat. Okay, but yeah, Toy Story 3, Shrek Forever After have kind of dominated the headlines here, Triple Tap as well. And Hong Kong has this thing that it does where it likes to overmarket films that it knows are not going to sell well. Films that are not going to do well because they need people to go.
Yeah.
They need people to fill their seats. And Triple Tap isn't. Tap is not. I hate to say it, but it just looks rubbish.
But you know what? Even if it is, I can see local audiences lapping it up because Louis Koo has done what he's done well for himself the past couple of years. And Daniel Wu as well. He's been a good emerging talent. In the local scene. But I can see local audiences just lapping it up because it's a couple of good-looking guys, an action film. It's a shame because we'll be profiling someone later on who does a lot more justice to Hong Kong action.
Mm,
but you'll be hearing about that later. So, moving on very swiftly to a ridiculous film that's being advertised at the moment.
a very big step out of his canon, so to speak, is Jet Li in Ocean Heaven.
Ocean Heaven, which is not about a man with a turtle shell, in case you might have seen the poster.
I saw the poster and I literally thought, because there's two people looking at an aquarium, and there's a silhouette of Jet Li wearing like this.
Like a purple turtle shell, wasn't it?
A purple turtle shell and a green and black, like, stripy top. And I thought he was going to actually be like this weird, like, live action, trying to pretend he's a turtle thing, swimming in this aquarium, going, "Hello, I'm Jet Li. Look at me, I'm a turtle." Then I found out it's about an autistic boy and his cancerous father, and I'm like, "Oh, I feel bad taking the piss now."
Yeah. Well,
but then again, it does sound like comedy gold.
I just feel sorry for if it is good and people just been put off because of a crap, ridiculous poster.
Yeah.
Because it does sound like a heartwarming story. I mean, he's a father who knows he's on the way out, so he's trying to educate, just give his son a chance in life, like teach him the basics and find a decent home for him. And it just looks ridiculous from the poster.
I honestly thought it was just going to be Jet Li in that suit the whole time going, "Hello, I'm a turtle. This is a real surreal movie where everything is in the dream."
I heard Jet Li's not going to do any more martial arts films, so I thought, like, oh, are they just going to do like a live-action Finding Nemo now?
That's probably the best way to sum it up, yeah, a live-action Finding Nemo.
Saying that, though, I reckon it's got a couple of saving graces. The director of photography is Christopher Doyle, who's Wong Kar-wai's DP.
Oh, Wong Kar-wai.
Yeah, for a long time. And I think he branched out his first feature film. What was that? I can't remember. It was well-received, anyway. So, Christopher Doyle, it'll be well-shot, I reckon. And Jet Li has shown he's got some acting chops.
In Hera.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He can do more than Romeo Must Die.
Well, leading us on to our first segue of the show.
There's a new Ip Man film coming out.
Yeah.
Not starring Donnie Yen.
I heard it's a prequel.
That's right. Yeah, it's The Legend of Ip Man.
Ooh.
So it's his
Sultry.
But anyway, it's directed by Herman Yao, so, you know, potential, but I don't know. I'm just going to wait out for it. They have got a real-life Kung Fu champ, though, playing the role. Yeah, so, I mean, you know, similarly as Donnie Yen played the iconic Ip Man, rather, in the other ones. Yeah, we'll hold out for it, I think. And there's a new Bruce Lee film coming out as well.
A new Bruce Lee film?
Bruce Lee, yes.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, Hong Kong's Golden Boy. They've got a young up-and-coming actor, Arif Lee, who won a couple of awards at the local Hong Kong Film Awards recently.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think it was Best New Performer, and obviously Hong Kong being Hong Kong, Best New Singer in a Film or something ridiculous. But he was in Echoes of a Rainbow. Recent critically acclaimed film. Yeah, he played a young track and field athlete or something like that. Haven't seen it. Yeah, one we should get onto.
Yeah, we should check it out. We'll let you know how it is.
But Bruce Lee, I mean, like, he's got big shoes to fill.
Yeah. He's a proper legend of Hong Kong cinema. And speaking of which, reading on Empire, with British Film Magazine, they're doing 100 Best Films of World Cinema.
Oh, yeah?
You know, yeah, and Bruce Lee's actually in there.
Sweet. Yeah, which one's that, then?
Way of the Dragon, 1972. That was in at number 95.
Respectable.
Yeah.
Good on him.
I mean, at number 97 was a film in 1993, Farewell, My Concubine.
Okay, another... Is that mainland or Hong Kong?
That's a Hong Kong film, actually.
Hong Kong, oh, okay.
Yeah, Cage Chan is the director, and... it stars the late, great Leslie Cheung.
Oh, yeah.
We mentioned it previously, did we?
Coming up, I think. Can't remember. It's all a bit jumbled. I've only had a couple hours sleep.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, another sort of darling of Hong Kong cinema and cantopop.
Indeed. Well, Farewell, My Concubine, it won the Palme d'Or at Cannes in 1993.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a very simple story. It's two apprentices at the, I think it's the Peking Opera. They're friends for like 50 years. Mm. The story's all about this one woman that gets between their friendship.
Oh, that does ring bells. Yeah, no, I've had that. I think when we were both studying film, that came up a few times. Hong Kong films have actually traditionally done quite well overseas in film festivals.
Yeah, especially the European ones.
Yeah.
Not particularly the Americans.
Not so much Sundance, more like the Cannes, Berlin's.
Yeah, like I said, it won the Palme d'Or. It got a BAFTA. Yeah, that's a British.
Yeah.
You know, ceremony, and it won a Golden Globe for Best Foreign Film as well.
Sweet. Yeah. So what other kind of gems were mentioned in this list?
Well, number 30 was Infernal Affairs.
Two right. Nice one. Number 30 as well.
Tony Leung and...
Andy Lau.
Andy Lau. Yeah. Yep, that was a fantastic film.
Absolutely brilliant. Is it the whole trilogy in there, or just the Infernal
Affairs
one?
Just the Infernal Affairs one.
Number one, yeah.
Yeah.
Fair play. I thought it was the more... cohesive,
yeah.
I think.
It was like the backbone for the rest of the series.
Yeah.
Number 42 was In the Mood for Love, which is a Wong Kar-wai film.
That's a great film.
Yeah, that was in 2000. It starred Tony Leung and Maggie Cheung.
That's probably one of my favourite shot. It's probably one of the best shot local films or films I've ever seen.
It's possibly one of the most beautiful films ever shot.
And I remember some of the sequences were absolutely perfect.
The costumes were stunning. Absolutely stunning. Like, yeah. They just looked the part. I mean, Tony Leung, oh, what a handsome man.
He is a handsome chap.
I'm going
chap.
Really gay.
I love how he loves his noodle soup as well. He goes down with his flask.
Yeah.
And he always passes the lady and they always play that same song, the really classical cello piece. It's a really nice piece as well. Haven't got a clue what it is. Maybe email in if you know.
Yeah, and the last film that I noticed was number 70, Hard Boiled. By John Woo.
Sweet.
John Woo.
Favourite of both of ours, actually.
Indeed. And that leads us on to our profile.
Ah, is it that time of the week again?
It is that time of the week. It's profile time.
It's profile time.
Oh, right. This week, we're going to be doing a legend of Hong Kong cinema, Mr. John Woo.
John Woo, Hong Kong heavyweight.
Yeah. Primarily known as a... as an action director.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, let's talk very quickly about some of the films he's done.
Well, Face Off is like one of my favourites.
Yeah, Face Off was bloody brilliant. And that was pre-Matrix as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, Matrix was one of the first films to come out on DVD. I remember that.
Mm-hmm.
And I had Face Off on VCD. Low quality. Watched it about a million times. I'm surprised it still worked by the end. But that is a legend of a film.
I had it on VHS.
Seriously? Yes. Seriously?
VHS. Wow. And we watched that tape till it was almost dead.
Yeah, that's what I love about VHS as well, because you can tell when there's a well-loved tape, because it's all grainy and it's just been watched so many times.
Yeah, and watching Face Off like that was brilliant. I mean, the action sequences in that film. Oh.
And, I mean, we're talking about John Travolta and Nick Cage, who are like two of the biggest actors of that period as well.
Well, they were heavyweights at that time.
They're going face-to-face, numero.
Yeah, and they both played really eccentric characters. Mm. I mean, they had to do, was it Pollux Troy?
Anyway, so just let's set up very quickly. John Travolta's the good guy.
At the beginning, yes.
Yeah, he's a cop. Yeah. And he's hunting down Nick Cage and his brother.
Yeah.
They're a couple of freewheeling criminals, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, obviously, the title comes into it. You get this big face-off thing. He goes undercover, right?
He takes Nicolas Cage's face, which is...
Off? He takes it off?
Yeah, he takes it off. And he becomes...
Nick Cage for a bit.
Yeah, I can't remember his character's name.
Oh, Castor Troy.
Castor Troy, not Pollux Troy. Pollux Troy is his younger brother.
Yeah, he can't tie his shoelaces.
he eventually befriends his brother again and tries to get information on where this bomb's being held.
Yeah, that's the main plot, isn't it? Like, there's a bomb somewhere in the city.
And he gets stuck in his body because guess who wakes up? Castor Troy. What does he do? He takes
a bit of John Travolta on.
Yeah, he wears
his skin for a bit.
Yeah, packs on a few pounds and...
Oh, yeah, that's John Travolta in his sort of meaty best. He's had a burger or two. Yeah. A Royale with cheese or two. Yeah.
He's done an Elvis.
God.
Yeah. Well, actually, we should very unprofessional. We should start at our face off because before John Woo was recognized as a big Hollywood name, a big Hollywood director, he started off making local films.
That's right. Well, I mean, he's not from Hong Kong originally, is he? He was born on the mainland, wasn't he?
He was born on the mainland, and his family fled to Hong Kong during the chaos of the Civil War.
It was the Civil War, was it?
Yeah, Chinese Civil War.
When was the Chinese Civil War?
About 1946.
I'm very uneducated.
About 1946.
Okay.
And the family were incredibly Christian. And they moved to Hong Kong when he was about 5.
Okay.
And they ended up living in the slums in Shek Kip Mei.
Okay, okay. So he grew up sort of like a hard background.
Yeah, yeah. He's a Kowloon boy.
Kowloon boy.
Yeah, he's a Kowloon boy.
I'm an island boy myself, but I believe you're a Kowloon boy.
I am a Kowloon boy. In fact, I'm from all over the place. All over, Hong Kong.
Bit of a nomadic local.
I've lived everywhere. But John Woo, he lived in Shek Kip Mei. Lived in the slums, actually.
Mm.
And one of the big reasons for his faith was that when he was a lot younger, he couldn't afford to go to school.
Yeah.
Yeah, he couldn't afford to do a lot of things. And
well, like a lot of people during that time, that would have been early 50s, getting on to the 60s kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. And a church and a lot of his friends helped him out so that he could get an education.
Oh, that's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. He was sort of taken in by one of these religious educational establishments, right?
Yeah, I think it was a Catholic school.
Was it not... not Jehovah's Witnesses. What do they call them? What are they called? Lutheran. I believe it was a Lutheran school that gave him his Christian education.
I don't know that one.
That's right. They helped him out. Correct me if I'm wrong. Like, feel free to email in. We'll throw you the email later. I mean, and it comes out later on in his films, doesn't it? There's a lot of religious symbolism.
Yes, yes, there is. Like the doves that you see predominantly in...
Well, it's Face Off.
Which is a homage to one of his early films, The Killer.
The Killer.
The Killer,
big film, yeah.
Chow Yun-fat.
He loves a bit of Italian fat.
He does. And he used it in... he overused it in Mission Impossible 2.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's one thing about John Woo. He's got his trademarks and he likes to pepper his films with his individual stamp.
He does. And you know what? He was quoted as saying that, he used the pigeons as a symbol of peace, of purity.
Pigeons?
Not pigeons, doves, doves, sorry. Not pigeons, yeah.
Doves, yeah.
Pigeons, the, the AIDS rats of the sky.
Oh, aren't they, yeah.
But no, doves, he used them to symbolise peace, purity, kind of like, putting in his Christian beliefs in there.
I think there's a lot of it in... Not just the Bible, but in a lot of, like, religious texts and things. The dove's a symbol of hope, isn't it? Redemption. Anyway, that's one of many of his trademarks. Others being, like, obviously, the overuse of slow motion. He loves this, a bit of Max Payne-style guys with two guns. Oh, that's another one as well. Like, jumping about, having a bit of a shootout in slow-mo.
And the developers of the Max Payne game and the Max Payne movie with Mark Wahlberg.
Less said about that, the better.
Yeah. But the games were pretty solid. And they were inspired heavily by John Woo's style.
Definitely.
Lots of slow motion, dual wielding, guns. One of the traits of John Woo is that he has these characters that struggle morally. They struggle between good and evil.
Yeah.
Even his villains, that he sees a lot of good in them. And
no one is fully good or fully bad. A lot of his heroes could be seen as anti-heroes in a lot of ways. And I think as well, as you were saying, the villains have moments of respect, especially when you get, like, a face-off between, no pun intended, between a good guy and a bad guy. You know, like, they have certain moments when they look into each other's eyes and it's like, yeah, I've got a bit of respect for you, you dirty scumbag. I'm going to bring you down, but fair play, I will nod my head to you.
Aw, I'm going to kiss you. Staring into each other's eyes, holding guns at each other. Yeah, here's a Freudian metaphor.
While doves fly in the background. Slow-mo.
And then rose petals fall slightly onto the bed. Yeah, brilliant.
Oh, dear.
Well, let's get back.
Yeah, moving swiftly on this.
Let's get back on topic. So he did a... He did a couple of films in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
He did A Better Tomorrow. Yeah.
Better Tomorrow.
Better Tomorrow, Better Tomorrow 2. Both very successful Hong Kong films. If you haven't seen them, go and watch them.
Yeah, well, Better Tomorrow, that's got Leslie Cheung, right? The very famous and well-loved local Cantopop star and actor.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he, quite tragically, I believe he committed suicide by jumping off the Mandarin Oriental.
Oh.
And it was quite a big thing locally. You know how they love their local Canto pop stars here?
Yeah.
So when they go, like Anita Moy being another one, it's always very sad.
Any reason why he killed himself?
Well, I'm not too sure. I mean, I believe he was a closet homosexual. So, that would have been like the 70s, 80s in Hong Kong.
Yes.
Probably still looked down upon quite a lot.
Oh. That's such a shame.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it was a big loss to not just the Canto pop world, but the acting world. Again, Hong Kong, they love, if you're a counterpop star, gives you license to be an actor, TV commercials, everything. You're an ambassador, basically.
Ah, that's very tragic.
Yeah, it is. Anyway, he was one of the characters alongside Chow Yun-Fat, I believe, right? Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Chow Yun-Fat, discovered by John Woo, became his muse, pretty much.
Yeah, I would say that. I mean, he's starred as the lead in a lot of his big films, hasn't he?
Yes, indeed. Chow Yun-Fat. Actually, John Woo had a lot to say about Chow Yun-Fat in an interview.
Well, yeah, having discovered him, I think, and worked with him so closely and frequently, they've developed quite a relationship, haven't they?
Yeah, because...
bit of a bromance there.
Yeah. Well,
didn't John Woo... No, that's not John Woo. He didn't do Brokeback Mountain, did he?
No, he did not.
Ang Lee. Sorry, yeah. I'm confusing another heavyweight of local Chinese cinema. So, yeah, John Woo on Chow Yun-Fat.
Yes.
He loves to get on Chow Yun-Fat.
Well, he said that apart from, thinking he's a great actor, he said he was natural, he was like a dream hero, tall, elegant and romantic.
Aww.
Yeah, which you can see in The Killer. and Hard-Boiled as
well. Hard-Boiled, that's that anti-hero thing again. He's a flawed hero. He's a good guy, and, you know, he's just taking on the bad guys, and he always wants to do things right, even when his boss is telling him, lay off the case. But, I mean, he treats women bad. he's a chain smoker, heavy drinker.
Well, he is called
a bit of a dick.
He is called Tequila.
But I mean, they're very lovable characters he plays, right?
Very much so, and you know, he's got that kind of grace to him, and he has so much screen presence, and I think John Woo really brings that out of him. Even in these action roles, you know, he's either a cop or, you know, or a contract killer in The Killer.
That's right,
And
but he's shown to be human as well.
Yes. That's kind of where
it's got his tender side.
Thanks for interrupting there.
Sorry, pal.
And, he's got this kind of charm to him, even though you want to hate him because he's he's a contract killer. But Chow Yun Fat says Chow Yun Fat. John Woo says about Chow Yun Fat. He says that he saw a lot of his own idols. Steve McQueen. That's a huge one.
Well, he would have grown up watching all the big Steve McQueen films, right? Great Escape.
Indeed, but, you know, to compliment someone by saying, I saw Steve McQueen in this guy.
Yeah.
That's huge.
That's a huge compliment.
And Cary Grant as well.
Yeah, I can see that. You know, you're talking about screen presence.
Yeah,
and a sort of suave, very masculine character. That's Chow Yun Fat, isn't it?
Especially
but with grace.
Especially in The Killer. You look at him in The Killer. He's got slick back hair. He's wearing fantastic suits.
Oh, he's impeccably dressed, isn't he?
And in Hard Boiled as well. I remember the opening scenes. He's in a tea house. And even though he's got like the stereotypical toothpick in his mouth, and
the whole film, yeah.
And he sat there with his mate in a kind of Hawaiian-esque shirt. And
it's like every day is Friday, kind of. Yeah,
he's still so. He's so pure.
Yeah, he's like your rough. He's portrayed as sort of your everyman cop, like dressed down,
yes,
bit rude mouth, you know,
but with a heart of gold.
With a heart of gold, but the thing is,
even though he bends the rules,
yeah. Oh, he's a maverick.
There we go. That's a.
But a maverick,
Yeah.
In the vein of Cary Grant as well, like he's got presence. He's got a bit of a swagger, even if he's just a loud mouth everyman.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Maverick. I like that. Mm. Maverick. I think that fits the Steve McQueen mold as well.
Yeah.
When you were talking about his idols.
Hmm. And then John Woo actually said that he sees a lot of himself in Chow Yun Fat. So whenever you see Chow Yun Fat's character on screen, you see a lot of John Woo. Because John Woo, when he was young, he had a lot of problems.
As you're saying.
Yeah, he was very quiet, very insular, and he found that putting himself on screen.
he can make. I guess
he can express himself, and he felt that Chow Yun Fat could do that, so that's why he stars in a lot of his films.
Wow!
Because I guess he sees him as almost parallel to him.
Yeah, he can sort of, because he's so shy. Well, I guess a bit shy. It's easier for him to create a character for Chow Yun Fat to be a bit of himself, right? Because I mean, you find it with a lot of creative people. Actually, they're quite shy and introverted.
Yes.
Whereas you wouldn't think that sometimes when you look at the work that they can produce, you know. And I guess we're talking about John Woo. I almost forgot his name there. he's the same. You know, he's very brash, big action films with a lot of dialogue and some great stuff. And that's how he can choose to express himself.
Yeah, behind the scenes, he's a very quiet, family-oriented
guy.
Yeah, Christian man.
Male.
Yes. Well, he's been married to the same woman for well over 30 years.
That's Annie Wu. Yes. They got three kids together.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Yeah, it is.
Especially in Hollywood, you get all these people.
Well, I mean, there's the pull of the life. Yeah, exactly,
yeah.
Exactly.
And he's managed to stay very much out of that. He's stayed very true to his roots. And he has been quoted as saying that he likes going back to the Hong Kong standards.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the beliefs that the Hong Kong people have. You know, very, very respectful.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, you can see that in his films as well. And I think a lot of that is his faith and his upbringing. You know, it comes across in his characters. He seems like a guy who appreciates what he has.
Yes.
And Chai Fat's character in Hardboiled is much the same.
And Tony Leung as well.
Tony Leung. Oh, his entrance in Hardboiled, I just wanted to say this, is one of the most badass scenes I've seen in a long time. And we're talking about a film that was made in 92, Hardboiled.
Yes.
His first, his entrance into the film is screaming along a motorway in a red Ferrari or some flash car, convertible, slick back hair, sunglasses.
I remember, yeah.
Dressed to the nines. And he's just hurtling along this road, like, listening to a pop song on the radio. Slinks into a bank, right, like, with a proper swagger. Oh, no, it's a library. And, of course, the receptionist looks up at this Leng Dai and, like, oh, you know, a bit of that. I wouldn't mind a bit of that. And he's just, like, this slick guy. Walks over, fingering, like, the books along the wall. Yeah, nothing wrong, nothing dodgy there. Until he finds the one he wants, pulls it out. Of course, it's the complete works of Shakespeare. But it contains a gun. He's on a hit.
Yes.
So that introduces him. He's not just a playboy. He's a playboy badass. He's an assassin, a hired gun, but one with style. And that's something that John Woo's very good at doing, introducing personality to his heroes and anti-heroes.
Yes. And from then on, won't spoil the film for you if you haven't seen it, but Tony Leung goes into that library, executes a guy.
Well, that's quite early in the film, you're not spoiling too much.
Executes him and just walks away clean. And one of the things that John Woo does is he manages to parallel his heroes and, like you say, anti-heroes.
Yeah, there's a balance, together. Isn't there? Yeah,
yeah, he manages to mesh them within the frame. There's, like you said, that opening scene when Tequila comes onto
that's
the
Chow
scene.
Yun-Fat, yeah.
Yeah, Chow Yun-Fat. When he comes onto the scene, he blends the two scenes together. Tequila's trying to put himself in the mindset.
Okay, the crime scene in the library, yeah. Because Tequila's a cop, so he's come in to...
To investigate.
Yeah.
And he starts fingering the books
that's
as well.
That's right,
and
yeah.
And it's kind of...
You get a very quick edit to back to Tony Leung.
Back to Tony Leung.
Yeah.
And they do the exact same thing. And Tequila's fingering the books and goes past the works of Shakespeare.
Mm.
And then comes back because he realises his finger's wet.
Because basically he's shot this guy and there's blood pouring everywhere and it goes on the book.
It goes on the
book. So he pulls it away and there's like a silhouette of a book. So Chow Yun-Fat, like, oh, this is badass as well. He walks onto this crime scene, right? He's like one of the lead cops. And what is he munching? A sausage McMuffin. You got your forensic specialist.
That. Yeah, I forgot that. Sausage McMuffin.
And he just walks in, bosses this scene, like, what's going on? And he's like, oh, yeah, this has happened, boss. Yeah, I reckon it was a close kill, and he's just munching this sausage McMuffin, just like, kind of like, and he cracks a joke or something, and then like, he's like, all right, okay, now we'll get down to some police work. So he slaps a book down, and he's like, okay, so we're looking for this kind of book. And
that's size.
Yeah, and that's when it cuts to what you were saying, where he's fingering these books, he loves to finger a bit of a book, and he's got a wet finger, and that's when he discovers the murder weapon, right?
Yes, and later on in the film, you see Tony Leung and Tequila together, and I'm not going to spoil it for you because if I do, that ruins the whole setup of the film.
Please don't.
But they spend a lot of time together for the rest of the film, meeting each other, lots of action scenes where they're shooting at each other, that sort of thing.
Well, yeah.
And they're both
marksmen.
Yes.
Like,
and
great
they're
marksmen.
Almost mirror-imaged. As in, here's a cop, here's a contract killer.
They're on opposite sides of the law, aren't they?
Yes.
Yeah.
But they still have the same moral code.
That's
right. They still
right.
live and die
Every
by...
man has a code.
Yes, and they live by the
the gun, I suppose.
But the family code as well.
Oh, yeah.
You must protect those that you care about, and that's a huge thing for John Woo, because it reverberates in Hard Target.
That's right,
Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Oh,
I mean, they look...
JCVD.
Yeah, I mean, the main lass in that, I can't remember her name.
Yancy Butler?
Yeah, she's looking for her father, who has been murdered, and that's not spoiling anything for you.
Again, quite early.
Yeah, and it's all about family. I mean, Jean-Claude Van Damme, he gets help from his family later on in the film.
Yeah.
Yancy Butler's character, Natasha.
So is she quite young in this film?
She is quite young.
So around about 10, 18, 28...
I have no idea. I'd say...
Venture a guess.
I'd say she's about 25.
Okay, so she's not like a schoolgirl running about.
No, she... I mean, she's got a convertible.
Fuck.
That's maybe like 28, 29.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she enlists Jean-Claude Van Damme to come and help her. Find her father.
Well, what's happened, yeah.
And it's a very family-orientated film. A lot of... little families are built together. Natasha, which is Yancy Butler, Chance, which is Jean-Claude Van Damme, he's called Chance, and
Chance Bordeaux or something French.
And this French cop, they make this little unit until something happens.
Yeah, won't say what.
And towards the end of the film, Jean-Claude Van Damme says, I need to go see my uncle, and they form another family bond there.
Sweet. Yeah, it's another theme that comes out in his films.
Looking out for your family. Yeah. And there's a couple of war vets in that as well who are homeless. And they all band together to help each other on the street. So there's a lot of family themes there. Hard Target has got a stellar cast. It's got Lance Henriksen in it. And if you don't know who that is, he is the robot. Android in Aliens.
Aliens, yeah. Yes. So another big actor, stalwart of cinema.
He's huge. He's a brilliant, brilliant actor. Oh, and he was in Call of Duty: Modern Warfare 2.
A voice actor, mind.
Yeah, voice actor, but one of the biggest games of last year. So yeah.
Yeah, Chronicles of Riddick. His couple of appearances and quite a lot of films over the years.
But yeah, I mean, he was in Aliens, and that's a huge film.
Oh yeah,
and.
Well, that's one's profile for another time, James Cameron.
I have to say though, John Woo really does pick his villains well. He really does. Lance Henriksen was absolutely wonderful as Emil. Very cold, sadistic, very focused on his money and getting what he wants.
True villain.
Yeah, because Hard Target is all about these rich people that pay hobos to become living targets for these rich people to hunt.
Yeah, it's basically they're so rich that they need to create their own little game in which to occupy them and entertain themselves.
To get themselves off.
Yeah. It's actually...
In a Freudian sense.
quite a common theme in cinema, actually, and fiction over the years.
Yeah, and Lance Henriksen plays that part beautifully. And... oh, what's the quote? John Woo was he was the director of Hard Target.
Yeah,
and obviously, Jean-Claude Van Damme actually came out and said, you know, I want John Woo to do this film because I want him to bring something special. I want him to, you know, change my career path.
Yeah.
Give me my character a bit more depth and everything, and he did.
Well, I mean, Jean-Claude Van Damme was straight quickly, big actor of the 90s.
Yes.
But predominantly in action films. This is an action film as well, but, you know, as we said, John Woo's good at injecting a lot of personality.
A lot of humanity.
Humanity, great word.
Yes.
Into the characters. So, when you say that, it's a good little quote there, actually, to have.
I mean, Jean-Claude Van Damme had a lot of respect for John Woo. As did John Travolta, as you've seen, he's been in Face Off.
That's right.
He was also in Broken Arrow, which was 1996, with Christian Slater.
That's right, and John, what am I talking about? Who are we talking about?
Broken Arrow.
John Travolta, again, a great villain in that.
Fantastic. And very, very varied. He does struggle... at times, I mean, he is a maniac in the film, but at times he does show his human side, and John Woo seems to be able to do that. He seems to be able to give even the harshest villains in the films some sense of humanity, some kind of moral code that they can live by, and that's a lot of respect to John Woo.
Yeah, definitely.
Not John Woo! Wow, just to get all racist there.
So Broken Arrow kind of that's definitely his Hollywood period. So he'd made his mark in Hong Kong with the big films. He'd done quite a lot of films, but the big ones being like A Better Tomorrow, Hard Boiled.
Yes.
And then he graduated to Hollywood. Hollywood recognised his talent, and he made quite a few action films there. Face-Off.
Face-Off,
mentioned.
Well, Broken Arrow was just before Face-Off.
96,
you said? 96, yeah, yeah. Face-Off was 97. And those two films, they did well at the box office.
Oh, you know it.
They made John Woo a household name when it came to action films.
Well, that's right, actually, yeah. In America, yeah.
I mean, Broken Arrow alone made worldwide, I think it was something close to $155 million.
Wow, and that's back in the day as well.
That's back in the day. So you think about that, that's a lot of money, especially for a movie that featured Christian Slater.
Hey, you know what? For as much as you can knock him, for the true romance, I love Christian Slater, man.
Oh,
he's got a special place in my heart.
It's just that he was never that successful.
Yeah, he's still Christian Slater. I'm having a lot of trouble with that.
Yeah. We're slurring.
Well, I think that was probably his peak, you know, because after that he did a couple of shoddy rom-coms.
He did Mission Impossible 2.
Christian Slater?
Oh,
I'm talking about Christian Slater.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, sorry. No,
Christian Slater, he did Wild Things with Cameron Diaz.
Oh, yeah.
Let's not talk about that.
So, but yeah, no, John Woo, you're right. He went on to do the sequel to Mission Impossible.
Yeah, he did Mission Impossible 2. Very action-y.
Oh, very typical John Woo style.
Yes. A lot to do with the morality of man as well.
Yeah, definitely.
There was a lot of, you know, the face mask thing.
I'm
a villain. Ooh, I'm Tom Cruise. Ooh, I'm a villain. You know, really, really pushing that metaphor really hard. But it's a good
for what it is, it is entertaining. It's very hard for Mission Impossible 2 to live up to its predecessor. The first one was brilliant.
Yes.
Okay, brilliant. So for Wu, I think he kind of realised he wouldn't eclipse the first, so he would make his own. There's a school of thought in cinema called the auteur theory that basically comes from a French word, that auteur meaning author. That a director can be the author of a film. And
yes.
I think John Woo definitely fits this this theory. Because, as we've said, he's got a lot of trademarks. Doves. The slow motion action. And these double wielding guns. And codes of morality. And he took Mission Impossible 2. And I think he infused these elements. And he made his own film. He broke away from sort of like what trying to make another Mission Impossible. And just made Mission Impossible 2, the action film of the year.
Explosions galore.
Do you remember two motorbikes, and they try to shoot each other in the air, and they end up, like, tussling and doing, like, a 360 or something?
Yeah, and that was... it was over the top, but the thing that John Woo does best is he gives action films some heart.
Hmm, definitely, yeah. I mean, you can still associate a lot with these two characters in... Is that Gerard Butler? In Mission Impossible 2, was the bad guy. I can't remember who the bad guy is. Could have been...
It was that Australian dude, wasn't it?
Don't know. Oh, I could have sworn it was a slimmer, younger Gerard Butler. He's one who's packing on the pounds as well.
We should check that out.
We should do our research.
Yes, we really should. Well, we should start to wrap this up.
Yeah.
To give a testament to John Woo's style of action, Hard Target... it was sent back to the MPAA, which is the rating association for American films. It was sent back 7 times for cuts to the violence before they could give it an R rating.
Wow. So still got an R rating, but they were like, look, John, you're going to have to cut. I mean, it's great. It's all good and well. He shoots this guy in the eye, right? But does blood have to spray all over his face and a baby's face? Hot ball, there's blood on the baby's face when Chow Yun-Fat gets shot. And he's just like, let me rub that blood off your cheek, little baby. Goochie, he's like, you know, goochie, goochie, in the baby. And it's covered in blood.
He does violence well, I will say that. He does action and violence well.
Yeah. But
even in movies like Paycheck and Wind Talkers.
Yeah. Oh, Wind Talkers. Again, codes of morality.
Yes.
Because they were using...
That was a war film, wasn't it?
It was.
Nicolas Cage.
Is that Nick Cage as well?
It is.
He does love his heroes.
He likes to repeat actors, and I can understand why, because he seems to bring out the best of them.
Yeah.
He brought out the best of John Travolta in Broken Arrow and Face Off.
Yeah.
And in Face Off, Nicolas Cage as well.
That's right, yeah. But he can also do, as he's shown recently, with the Redcliffe saga, Redcliffe 1 and 2.
Tony Leung's in that again as well.
Again, yeah. And Takeshi Kaneshiro, who's a big Asian actor of the moment. He was in films like House of Flying Daggers.
Yeah,
really good in that.
Yeah, he's a very pretty man, isn't he?
He's very pretty. Well, he's the face of Armani in Asia now, and he's had several contracts. But I think that speaks volumes. That, you know, they've decided, yeah, we can get D-Bex and C. Ronaldo. You know, Megan Fox to, like, be the faces of their campaigns. And fair enough, they're all beautiful people. But they decided to go for an Asian man, a beautiful Asian man. Who's also in Chungking Express, if you want to put a face to a name.
Fantastic. Mm,
yeah. Anyway, in the Redcliffe saga, he's done action, but he's gone for a Chinese tale.
The Story of the Three Kingdoms.
That's it, yeah.
And he said he wanted to make a film about China uniting, even though they're at war, because he was quoted as saying that he feels like all the Chinese people in the world, Chinese people in Taiwan, Chinese people in the Western countries, in Hong Kong, in China, they all seem to hate each other.
Yeah, it's weird.
And he said, yeah, it is. And he said he wants to bring them all closer together. And
through common lineage, history and stuff, isn't it?
And Redcliffe was his... he's been wanting to do that film ever since the 90s.
He
was mentioned in a few interviews.
I didn't know that.
He was saying that it was his pet project. He wanted to explore that. And I haven't seen it yet. I've got it ready to watch. But
I've not seen it either. But it was received quite well by audiences, like, as it's taken to the box office and critically.
Yeah, it's the most successful film in China of all time. It eclipsed Titanic.
Well, thank fuck for that.
It eclipsed it.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is saying something, because that record stuck for a long time.
Titanic was a huge film, and Redcliffe beat it by quite a margin.
Sweet.
It was a two-parter.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
It was released in two parts, because it's such a huge story. Yeah, for anyone who doesn't know, the story of the Three Kingdoms are three kingdoms that were at war in China, trying to take over all of China, and eventually there was a huge war, and lots of famine, starvation, lots of heroes.
Happens, yeah.
Yeah,
war.
Check it out for yourselves.
Well, basically, yeah, if you don't know the story, check it out.
Redcliffe. It came out in 2009.
So, yeah, that's our little John Woo segment. And just to wrap it up, you had a couple of nice things to say.
Yeah, I think there was a couple of things that John Woo has said himself, and what other people have said about John Woo. One of the ones from Quentin Tarantino was a studio executive asked him, said to him, I suppose John Woo can direct action scenes, and Quentin Tarantino was quoted as saying, sure, and I suppose Michelangelo can paint ceiling. Quentin Tarantino is a bit of a dickbag, but to have someone with that caliber, to say that about John
Woo. And he's known for his action as well. Actually, I know for a fact Quentin Tarantino is heavily influenced by Hong Kong cinema and by the work of John Woo, who was big in the 90s, you know.
And that's brilliant.
Sorry, that was my phone.
Wow, we're getting very unprofessional again. But in closing, I think the best quote that I can sum up John Woo with is Jean-Claude Van Damme, when he was trying to get John Woo for Hard Target.
Aye.
He described him as the Martin Scorsese of Asia. And that is a huge accolade.
That's a real nice sentiment.
You know, for people in the industry in Hollywood to actually say that about a Hong Kong director, someone who has grown up from the slums, had an awful childhood dealing with poverty.
Yeah. But he's managed to step up and be not just a locally recognised, but internationally recognised.
Internationally, and not just for his action, but for his family valued. I guess action films. He does put a lot of himself into his films. And his moral code.
Well, as we said, it's permeated not just characters but films. And for someone like Jean-Claude Van Damme, you know, hugely respected again for being an action hero.
Even if he had the girliest mullet ever.
Oh, it's a super mullet.
Anyway, sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, sorry. Just to have someone like him to say, yeah, Here's John Woo, and I would definitely say he's the Martin Scorsese of Asia. Martin Scorsese, you know, hugely respected director. Raging Bull, Taxi Driver.
Goodfellas.
They gave him the Oscar the other year for The Departed. Again, based on a Hong Kong film. Not a John Woo film, but a Hong Kong film.
Infernal Affairs,
yes. Actually, weren't you telling me the other day something about Tony Leung, and who played the bad guy in Hard Boiled? He got the idea for Infernal Affairs.
From Hard Boiled.
And you can see it. There's
a lot of parallels.
Yeah, yeah. Not wanting to give it too much away.
Yes, a lot of parallels, and we'll leave it at that. But yes, Jean-Claude Van Damme, John Woo saying about John Woo,
yeah.
The Martin Scorsese of Asia, and that's beautiful.
Yeah, I think that deserves a little round of applause. Yeah. Cheers, John Woo.
John Woo. What a legend. And let's hope that after Redcliffe, he doesn't disappear for a couple of years.
I think we'll see some good stuff coming out of him for the next couple of years.
Fantastic.
Fingers crossed. All right.
So, recently, there's been a little bit of Matt Damon. he's been in a couple of recent films, hasn't he? So, I've recently watched Green Zone.
Cool. What's it like?
It was all right. It starts off really good, and the ending's pretty poo. I like saying poo.
Poo-poo. Yeah. But basically...
Green Zone, Matt Damon.
What, is he just reprising his Bourne ultimatum?
No.
Matt Bourne, what's it? Jason Bourne.
Jason Bourne. He's in the US Army. He's on one of those WMD teams looking for weapons of mass destruction in Iraq.
George W. looking for the WMDs.
He's Captain Miller, Captain Rob Miller, and he goes around looking for WMDs.
I'm Captain Rob Miller.
Rob Miller. and he's looking for these WMDs, and they're not there, and he starts questioning everything, and he meets Brendan Gleeson, who's...
the Irish actor.
Yeah, he's the dad... In 28 Days Later.
Yeah.
He was in The Village.
I actually quite like him a lot, you know. Yeah. He's a very good character actor and a good supporting actor to have in your...
He's been in Gangs of New York.
Aye.
Which is a Scorsese film, so obviously Scorsese likes him. He was in Mission Impossible 2.
Was he?
Yes, he was.
I can't even remember that.
And he was...
He was in Bruges.
In Bruges.
He was in Bruges.
Yeah.
He was in Bruges. In Bruges. with Colin Farrell. That's a brilliant film as well.
It is. I
just thought after the first half hour, this is all right. It's kind of funny. And then it just got so much better.
Midgets and drugs.
Yeah. And Colin Farrell actually does proper well, just playing an idiot.
Yeah. They did loads of drugs, didn't they, in that film? Lots of ket.
Yeah. Like coke, and they were like, whores in their hotel room and a midget. And Colin Farrell spends the whole time just taking the piss out of the midget.
I just love that one bit in the scene where he's out with that lass and that American guy starts on him and he just twats him and then his wife says something and he twats her as well. And then he goes, "That was for John Lennon, you cunt."
Such an ace film.
Just to get some American passion in there. But yeah, Brendan Gleeson's in Green Zone, and it's quite action driven. I mean, it's directed by Paul Greengrass, who did the Bourne, Identity, Supremacy, and Ultimatum. So you don't see anything.
Okay, yeah.
Because it's all shaky
super
camera.
Like frantic action, yeah. Actually, what did I see recently? Oh, God. I hate to bring it up, actually. From Paris with Love. John Travolta as a bald CIA agent with badass. And Jonathan Rhys-Meyers. You know, he's one of these good-looking Gucci ad guys. He's the Irish actor. He's currently in The Tudors. He plays Henry VIII.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Anyway, it's a crap film. But if you like 90s action films, you know, Die Hard, Die Hard 2, anything with Schwarzenegger in it, or Van Damme, which I'm a big fan of, and I think you are as well, right?
Yeah, well, we mentioned in our John Woo profile.
Yeah. I think you like it, actually. If you suspend belief for a bit, it's got some awful, awful dialogue, and some pretty crazy events, but it's kind of cool, to see this stuff happening, you know, John Travolta's leaning out of an Audi, which is like barreling down a French highway with a rocket launcher. And his bald scalp is just like aerodynamically cutting through the air while he's holding this rocket launcher, trying to take out some terrorists. It's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. I really liked it.
I'm all down for some terrorist bashing. Yeah.
I don't know how I got onto that. Oh, yeah. The action actually is, like, well-balanced. Mm. I just find far too often these days in Hollywood, they love this quick camera stuff, and you just can't see anything.
That's Paul Greengrass's trademark, isn't it? And what's the point? I'm watching a movie. I don't want to feel like I'm actually in a war. Yeah, no. I want to watch Matt Damon kicking ass.
Exactly.
I don't want to watch the floor moving.
Oh, yeah.
Matt Damon occasionally popping into the scene and going, "Yeah, dig him down, dig him down, dig him down." That was Green Zone. It was just really disappointing at the end.
Is it really that the ending brings it down that much?
Yeah, because something just really unexpected happens, and even Matt Damon's character, you know, Rob Miller, he looks dumbfounded. He's like, "We're gonna end the film like this?" Like that's the look he gives. His character actually looks at what's unfolded in front of him and goes, "I can't believe this is happening."
Fuck.
And you're like, "I can't believe this is happening. What a cop out."
Oh, really? Shame.
Kinda. Well,
yeah, because I just saw Matt Damon in Invictus.
Oh, shoot, Africa.
Yes.
Did that sound South African?
Not at all.
Oh, dude, that sound more like it was from the West Country.
I do love a good South African accent, though, and he does a good job, better than DiCaprio did in Blood Diamond. I really enjoyed Blood Diamond.
I did too.
Yeah, and it was most memorable scene for me. Matt Damon is really early in the film. He plays the captain of the South African rugby team. What's his name? Francois Pienaar. And it's basically Invictus is the story of Mandela coming into power, having been released from 27 years of imprisonment.
Yes.
And he wins the election to become the first, black president of South Africa.
Yeah, what a man.
End of apartheid. Oh, he's a legend. He's well portrayed by Morgan Freeman. You've got to have Morgan Freeman. He's your go-to guy, isn't he? Like,
I remember the first time I saw Andy Dufresne and Shawshank.
That's a great film. That's a great film. Yeah. But
carry on.
Yeah, sorry. Matt Damon, they've just had their asses handed to them, the South African
rugby team
by England. And they're passing around beers. And like one of them has a swig and he's like, "Oh, this beer tastes like shit." And like he's like the captain, so he's like, "Oh, I've got to do something." He's like, "Everyone, I'd like to propose a toast, like, grab a beer." And they're all, like, grabbing a beer. It's like, "Have a sip. Like, remember this day. Like, remember the taste of this defeat. And I promise yourself you'll never taste it again." Yeah. "Oh, you're right. This beer tastes like shit." And he just throws it against the wall. It's brilliant. It's a well-balanced film, actually, Invictus. I enjoyed it, yeah.
Lots of action, lots of...
No. It's not actually, no. They basically, Mandela wanted to inspire a country to unite, you know, after years and years of apartheid and separation. Even though he did get freely elected, the country was on the brink of civil war. It was incredible, actually, like the events going on in that country at the time. So it's a bit Hollywoodized, yeah. So they take rugby as kind of like a bonding thing. Because all the Afrikaners, right, like the white South Africans, they love rugby, right? And all the blacks hated rugby and they hated the Springboks, which is the national team, the green and gold colours, because of everything it represented, you know, an apartheid regime that denied them any kind of basic human rights. So it was about Mandela just saying, like, "Look, we've got to let the past be the past, bygones be bygones, and let's unite and let's win this World Cup." And he basically tries to inspire Matt Damon's character, Francois Pienaar, to get his men together and win the World Cup. And if you do your research, read a history book, you'll find out they did. So I've probably spoiled it for you, but good film nonetheless.
Oh, well, that ties in well to Green Zone then, because Green Zone has... it's all talking about Iraq and, like, what America are doing there.
Oh, yeah?
And... One of the lines from this translator called Freddie, who's an Iraqi, he says, what's going on here? These aren't your decisions to make. This is our country.
Mm.
What do you think you're doing here?
Quite right.
And Matt Damon just turns to him and says, I'm just doing my job.
I'm Matt Damon.
Well done.
Yes, well done.
Fantastic.
Also, I saw Aladdin recently. I rewatched that classic.
Disney film, Robin Williams.
He's the great genie, great genie. Mm-hmm. And they got Jafar in there with his angry, his annoying... what's his name? Iago.
Iago.
Yeah. But I just love a bit of Jasmine. She's gorgeous. She's a bit adventurous. She's posh.
Definitely one of the best Disney princesses.
I don't know, man. She's got some competition. Ariel. Good looking.
Mulan.
Mulan. Ah, yeah. Well, I know you like them Asians, so.
Indeed, sir. Well, yeah. Disney action. Yeah. Just to end the podcast there.
Yeah, that's a good way to round it out.
Yeah, some happy, lovely Disney times. Good try, everything over evil.
Yay. And that balances out the green zone stuff, I guess. Then.
Indeed, it does. So I guess we say goodbye, Tim.
Thanks very much for tuning in.
Yeah, and you can catch us at this is backcountryhk.podomatic.com.
Yeah, feel free to email in as well. We've got this is backcountryhk
@gmail.com.
Yeah, that's right. My man love bum buddy here will finish my sentences for me.
I've been doing it all podcast.
And I love you for it, Paul.
I do apologise, you big milky twat.
Just because you have nice hair. There's not mean you can get away with that.
All right, till next couple of weeks.
Enjoy yourselves.
Have a good one.
See ya.
Cheers.
You're right, this beer tastes like shit.